We sampled it from him, but it's not the same bass one.
You can get in serious trouble for copyright infringement.
You got an organ going.
Yeah? Copyright is not doing crap!
Copyright? What's copyright?
It's the right of the
host to
control.
Right?
You know what time it is.
Welcome to
the copyright.
It's fair enough.
What's up? Copyright experiment.
What's up?
So it's, as usual, myself, Jeff, DJ Mochi, and Tim Autonomy.
Yeah.
Rocking it late night in the studio.
11 o'clock, Thursday night.
Whoop, whoop.
This is the copyright experiment. As always, we discuss copyright issues in the music industry and intellectual property, and also play exclusively freely available music. If you like any music we're going to be playing later, obviously, hit us up on the blog, copyrightexperiment.tumblr.com. Download all the songs. Listen to past shows. It's a good website.
It's pretty sweet. What else is pretty sweet is what we're talking about tonight, which is...
it's a cool topic tonight, actually.
Yeah.
If I do say so myself.
So, I guess it's kind of a musician's crash course.
Yeah, you could say that.
Or maybe a post-production music crash course. So once you've made your music, then what do?
Yeah, exactly. So today is the Indie Musician's Guide to the Modern Music Industry. And we say indie because there's just so many opportunities for indie musicians to do what they want, which is get their music out to their fans and, you know, make a living off of it and stuff. And there's a tremendous opportunity to do that now, so it's really exciting. But it's also very daunting if you're a musician.
Yeah.
And we've talked about some of these things in the past, and, you know, we've also had people that say that, you know, you can't really have, you can't really, it's hard to think as a musician to about the business side of music. And so we're kind of doing this episode as a way to kind of clarify some of the options, maybe make it a little easier for people who aren't totally business-minded to, you know, learn how to, launch their music career themselves.
Which, as one of our past interviewees said, the music part of the brain and the business part of the brain are functionally different areas. So expecting, you know, yourself to know, you know, be able to figure this out well or easily is might not be the most scientifically sensible thing, I guess.
Yeah, but you know what? The reality is that artists have to start doing at least some of the stuff on their own, right?
Exactly.
So, but you know, we want to make it as painless as possible. So, so let's get started. Basically, we're picking up after you've made your music already. So you've made your music. Hopefully, it doesn't suck.
Just give up.
Quality music obviously is the only thing that's going to get you off the ground. But you know what? It's okay if it's not totally up to snuff, because really the best way to make quality music is just to make music.
Yeah, and just keep going at it.
Yeah. And pretty much almost every artist who's made it will tell you that as well.
Mm-hmm. So we've broken what we're going to talk about today down into three parts, which are...
First, before we do that, though, I kind of want to say that as we're talking about these things, it's good to remember what you want to accomplish with your music. And those aren't... I mean, it used to be, you know, that the money, the exposure, the fans, and all that, the lifestyle, it all kind of came in one package. You either made it or you didn't. But now with all the options available to people, that it means that those different things are attainable in different ways. So you can do things and make lots of money doing music, or you can just get lots of exposure, but not necessarily make money or get a lot of, you know, diehard fans, have a good following. But you don't necessarily have to do all of those if you don't want.
Yeah, I mean, there's a huge range of what I see people having in terms of community response and sort of fame, quote unquote. You know, you see people that are famous within small groups, but maybe no one outside that knows them, or you see people that are famous in, you know, popular circles, but then these underground people don't know of them, and, you know, so there's...
Or don't care about them.
Yeah. So there's a big range, and
you know, a lot of those artists are perfectly fine being unknown, and actually Vancouver is a good example of a music scene that a lot of artists are perfectly fine being known within that scene and not necessarily caring about being known outside of it.
Yeah, so anyways, what we're trying to say is there's a lot of opportunity for all different kinds of people, and, you know, it's not like you're just going to make it or not at all.
Yeah, definitely.
So, I guess what I was saying before is we're kind of going to break this down into three parts, which are, first of all, your rights. So when you make something, what does that mean in terms of your legal rights? Then distribution, because this has totally changed since a decade ago, and in order to succeed, you kind of have to embrace the new distribution methods, or at least it'll help you succeed. And then finally is marketing, which is a huge part of anything you're trying to, you know, proliferate or get attention for. So I think first, like I said, we're going to start off with copyright law.
So copyright is something, I mean, we talk about it a lot on our show, but for a musician, it's something that you kind of have to know about. You don't need to know all the details about, but you at least have to have a good idea of how it works so that you know how to protect your music and your rights as a musician. And also you know what you can do with other people's music and other people's how their rights can affect what you do with your music and their music.
Mm-hmm. So kind of the first thing is that when you create something and it's, you know, your original thing, you have the option to have an all rights reserved, mm-hmm. which basically means that you control the distribution, performance, derivatives, and any future use of your work. And that's something that you can also sign away, and there's kind of different parts of it. There's the publishing rights and then the master and recording rights. Do you want to explain those, Tim?
So there's what they call the phonogram rights, which is the master recording of your song, and then there's also the compositional rights. And the compositional rights are basically the person who wrote the song and anyone else who may have helped produce it and stuff like that. All of the stuff that you could translate to paper, basically. And then the phonogram is the actual recording, the master copy, the master tape. And you have two different rights for those. And traditionally, with when the music industry was driven by major labels, the artist, the songwriter, had the composition rights, and the label had the phonogram rights. And so the label was able to, you know, sue artists for copyright infringement because they owned the master. Mm-hmm. And the artist kind of, you know, they owned their composition rights, so they gained royalties through that, but the label also gained royalties through phonogram rights.
And that's, I think, a good reason to self-record, is that then you get to have the master recording rights.
Exactly.
And you get to say whether or not you want to try and sue someone, you know, how you want to go about it, whereas, you know, previously the artist didn't really have much say. Mm-hmm. And they also lose sort of a cut of, you know, sales or whatever, but that's something we'll talk about later.
Right. We'll talk about that later. It's good to keep control of both if you can, and it's actually really easy to now with the dramatic decline in the cost of recording and mm-hmm. people having home studios now and everything.
Computers.
Yeah, computer recording is really cheap and really easy, and it sounds great.
Yeah. And then another thing you have to know when you're making music, or at least keep in mind, is what you can do about samples and sort of what's okay and what's not and what you can get by with. And Tim and I kind of agreed that it's a good thing to think about this after you make the work. Because if you're thinking while you're making the work, oh, how much of that sample can I use? You know, are they going to sue me for this? You're creatively constraining yourself, and right. It's not going to be your best thing.
We've actually talked one of our earlier shows when Bauer was in trouble for his copyright infringement on the Harlem Shake. He was mm-hmm. the samples he used, he wasn't thinking about them at the time.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a downfall for him. But at the same time, after it was published, it was conveniently ignored as well. So it's something you shouldn't worry about during the creative process, but it is something that you should keep in the back of your mind, because like it or not, and we've kind of been vocal about how ridiculous and how the way that sampling is practiced in law now is a lot different than the letter of the law, mm-hmm. in fair use, at least. Besides that, you still have to worry about things like that. And we've talked before about how ways you can get away with sampling and, you know, cover yourself from lawsuits and stuff like that.
Yeah, basically just reduce your chances of having a lawsuit.
Yeah, and you can do that by things like obscuring where you got the sample from, or reducing
it backwards.
kind of obscuring the sound of it, or reducing the time that it's in the song, and also not making any money from it.
Yeah.
If you don't make money from it, if you give it away for free, no one is probably going to sue you over it because then there's no money in it.
Yeah. Whereas, you know, when these people started seeing the Harlem Shake blowing up, then they thought, oh, you know, that's my sample. I want a piece of that pie now.
Exactly.
So that's, I guess, where the problems come. And that kind of brings us to the components of fair use, which we sort of talked about a little bit, but now these are the actual legal components. The first of which, I'll just go through them and then let Tim explain them. We have a purpose and character, the nature of the copyrighted work, so this is the original that's being sampled or whatever, the substantiality and the amount of the copyrighted work, and the effect upon the, in brackets, potential market.
Right. So what was the first point there again?
Purpose and character.
Yeah, so you kind of, the way that you're using a piece of copyrighted material has a big impact on, or the character of it, it has an impact on whether it's considered fair use. And so, and the big turning point when it comes to the fair use law anyway, is the main point is whether you're using the spirit of the song or the spirit of the recording or just a piece of it, and whether, you know, something you're sampling is a signature part of the song that could potentially allow people to listen to that instead of the original, that then you're running into copyright infringement. But if you're using it for a purpose of your own creative derivative work, then according to fair use law anyway, in the United States and in Canada, it should be legal.
Yeah, so, you know, one thing I've read is, you know, be careful of stealing hooks,
mm-hmm.
because that is keeping the same character or purpose, you know.
Right.
Whereas if you take just a random word and a rap, you can't really say that that's stealing the character of it.
Right, and you're less likely to be successfully sued for that.
Mm-hmm. And then sorry, just about, we want something else?
Oh, I just want to say that, I mean, there's these laws, they oftentimes do work, but in the way that copyright infringement cases work now, most of the time artists will settle before they even go to the court. And that's because of certain court cases that kind of showed that you could be sued for a tiny sample. And one of the big ones was one of Bismarcky's albums that had an injunction granted against it until they cleared the sample. And so because of that, it kind of spooked a lot of people and caused them to, you know, just settle out of court before they actually had to go to court, which is unfortunate because a lot of cases... before that Bismarcky case, a lot of them sided with the defendant.
So the artist's remixing or sampling. Yeah.
Because according to fair use, usually, like we said, unless you take a major portion of it, it's considered fair use.
And then the next component of fair use is the nature of the copyrighted work. And so we kind of touched on that already. That's, you know, sort of if you're taking the spirit of it. The next is the substantiality and amount, which we also talked about, you know, don't take too much of it. And the effect on the potential market, which is basically, you know, if you're making a lot of money and stealing money from that person, so in a sense, then you can, there's a better chance you can be sued.
Right. If a fan is going to buy your work instead of someone else's, the person that you sampled, then that's a good indication that you're probably committing copyright infringement.
Yeah. And sort of interesting alternatives, which I think are great for indie musicians in order to get their stuff shared, is Creative Commons, which we talked about in a previous show. But it's basically an alternative to All Rights Reserved, where you forego or, you know, have special rights where you say, okay, you know, you can use this for remix if you, you know, say who it's from, or, you know, you don't, you know, you share it in the same way that I have, with the same rights on your derivatives or whatever.
Right. So it's a loosening of the All Rights Reserved copyright license, but at the same time, it's very structured. Mm-hmm. So there are very specific things that you can use Creative Commons licensed works for and things that you can't use them for. And a typical one, for example, is that you're allowed to create derivative works. So you can remix it, but you can't make money off of it, and you have to attribute where you got the material from.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a pretty common sense license that a lot of people are embracing, and a lot of platforms are embracing as well. Some of the platforms we're going to talk about in a bit embrace this. So when you upload your music, you can automatically license it under a Creative Commons license.
Yeah. And I think with that, we'll start talking about distribution. This is, you know, how to get your music out there in a physical or digital sense.
Yeah, and this has probably been the biggest change in the music industry so far. And it started with Napster and the rise of file sharing, and which basically shook the industry to its core. And kind of for a while, it was a free-for-all for a long time because the ways that consumers were getting music were totally not in line with the infrastructure of distributing music at the time. But things have really shifted in the last 5 years, I would say, where now there's been a lot of responses from like startup software businesses and internet companies that are now offering convenient ways for consumers to listen to music in which they're willing to pay for music again. And a lot of them are available to artists directly to use. And so we're going to go through some of those.
Mm-hmm.
But what first was talk about whether you need a label, actually. I think that's a good starting point because yeah. We're going to talk about a lot of ways where you can publish yourself where you don't need a label. And the label can serve a purpose of bringing you under a certain like canon or a genre of music, mm-hmm. can associate with you with other acts. But as far as being the way to distribute your music, it's not the case that a label is needed at all.
Yeah.
You can go your own way if you want.
And one of the ways you can go your own way, do you want to talk about the online and sort of digital methods first?
Just do the traditional stuff first. Okay. I mean, a lot, we at the station here, we actually get a lot of local bands who burn their own CDs,
mm-hmm.
which and sell them at shows and stuff like that,
yeah.
and which is fine. It's a pretty cost-effective way. If you want to make more than a few hundred copies of your CD, you're going to be better off getting a Glassmaster done at a copying house or something.
Yeah, which you can, you know, if you're really into that, you can look into that. And also, you know, some people I know cut vinyls.
Mm-hmm.
There are services that let you cut your own vinyls. Mm-hmm. Some of those we'll talk about later. And some of them, you know, they'll just do one-off kind of things for you.
Yeah, the passenger who we interviewed a few weeks back, his first release he cut on his own on vinyl,
mm-hmm.
and gave away to everyone.
Yeah. And I quoted that he felt he really, really reaped the rewards 2 years later. So, mm-hmm. you know, that's great. And you know, you could also make cassettes, I guess.
Yep.
Cassettes
are back.
If you want to be really hip and
yeah,
whatever.
The value of traditional media now is less as a way to get music to fans, but to prevent the mass distribution to fans. The boutique labels and the limited runs on CDs and vinyl and cassettes, those are all the ones that releases that the label or the artist doesn't really want a million copies of, and so they'll choose to release on a traditional format.
Mm-hmm. Which, yeah, I mean, there's various reasons to do that, but that's an interesting
right.
option at least. So I guess next we'll talk about the online digital.
Right. Now, this is probably the most daunting area to jump into if you're a musician trying to sell your music, or at least just distribute it. There's so many options out there. We're going to cover a few now and kind of go through the pros and cons of each one. But it's important to note that none of them are perfect and none of them are the best option. It's really just the best option for you.
Yeah, because they each have, you know, there's areas in which, you know, some of them are the best and they're also the worst and other things. So.
Right.
So I think first up, we'll start with Bandcamp.
Sure.
And Bandcamp is great because it allows monetization. You know, you can put up music and then you can make money from it and you can choose how much you want people to pay. You can,
and that's a digital download service.
Yeah, sorry. And so you can upload your music and people can pay for it or they can not pay for it and you can choose how much. And they take basically a 15% cut on digital sales and 10% merchandise. It changes when you make a lot more money.
You can also customize it so it looks really nice, suits yeah. your band. And then one of the biggest features that up-and-coming musicians use on Bandcamp is the name your price feature,
yeah.
where you can anybody can pay whatever they want for the music.
Mm-hmm. And so we actually play some name your own price things on this show because they're technically freely available.
Yeah, some of them are name your price with no limit, so you can type in zero and get that music.
Mm-hmm. And then you have the option to say if someone pays zero for it, then they have to enter their email and get on a
right.
mailing list.
Right.
And then, you know, then you can send mail directly to your fans. And I've discovered things that way, you know.
Mm.
I've been on a mailing list because I downloaded something for free and then, oh, this release is really cool. I'm going to buy it, you know.
Yeah. So it's a the one of the downsides of Bandcamp is that it's pretty limited in terms of the kind of online marketing you can do, and it really it's only good for selling online downloads for.
Yeah, and there's you don't see as many things blowing up via via Bandcamp.
Exactly, there a lot of the Bandcamp pages are very kind of. They're kind of an island there. You get your own URL, which is kind of cool, or a sub URL. But there's not a real social aspect to Bandcamp. And they kind of try to, they're trying to move in that direction, but there are other platforms that are better for that.
Yeah. And also one thing to keep in mind if you're looking to sell something in Bandcamp is that albums outsell singles 5-1, whereas the rest of the world, so other forms, it's about singles outsell albums 16-1.
Right.
So that's something to keep in mind.
Yeah, if you want to sell your full album, Bandcamp's a good way to do it.
Yeah. And also they do auto sound scanning, which is cool.
Right. And SoundScan is a way for... basically, SoundScan is a service by Nielsen to chart music. So if you sell your music on Bandcamp, there's a possibility you can get charted if it really does do well.
And you also get statistics for your downloads, and and they're from what I've seen and heard, pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty basic, but it's nice and intuitive. It's Bandcamp is a really good place to start selling your music for sure.
Yeah. And so, anything else to say about Bandcamp?
Nope. Let's move on.
Alrighty. So next up is Topspin. I don't know much about this. Tim, what do you know?
Topspin is one of the direct competitors with Bandcamp. They allow you to create a website where you can sell your own digital music on. And Topspin has a lot more features. It has a lot better online marketing and statistics and stuff like that. It's basically an amped-up version of Bandcamp. The downside is that Topspin is actually quite a bit more money, where on Bandcamp they take a cut of your sales, and Topspin you have to pay a monthly fee for it, and they start at $9.99 a month. So it's not cheap, and you gotta put in money right away. So you know, if you're just starting out and you don't anticipate making much money for the first year of your band or your artist career, then you know, you might be out of the pocket for a bunch of money through Topspin.
Yeah. And sort of on, was there anything else you want to say about Topspin?
Topspin is also nice because you can sell merch and tickets as well, if you want to do that.
And kind of on the opposite of the paying for sound services, SoundCloud is the next one I want to talk about, which is super easy, and you know, you can just make a SoundCloud and start throwing stuff up there without having any upfront cost. But here, you can't directly monetize anything, so you can't sell things via SoundCloud.
Right, you can link to things to sell on SoundCloud, but you can't sell anything through it, so it's not going to make you any money. But the basic accounts are free, and it's a good online presence to have because it's a very social platform, and a lot of people could discover your music. And you know, we actually discover a lot of music for our show through SoundCloud, so it's a good way to get your music out there for people to find.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I personally find 90% of music on this show is I'm just going through SoundCloud, looking at people's, you know, what they've liked and what they've shared and whatever. And so, you know, it's a great way to get attention. And I've seen artists, you know, sort of blow up on there, which, as we said, we don't really see on Bandcamp. And I've never heard of that happening on Topspin.
So those are the kind of main, the top players in the selling digital downloads on your website kind of field. You can also do it through, if you have a WordPress website, but that requires having your own website first. But then there's also these services that will sell your music through digital stores that already exist. We're talking stores like iTunes and Amazon and Google Play and stuff like that.
Yeah. And so the first of these is DistroKid, which is how old is it? It's new.
It's brand new. I think it's like less than a year. It's the new kid on the block. DistroKid. But yeah, they're actually... Because they're new, they're really competing really heavily with the other ones we're going to talk about in a minute, TuneCore and CD Baby. But DistroKid, for $20 a year, you can upload as much music as you want to the four major stores, iTunes, Google Play, Amazon, and also the streaming service Spotify, and which is a great deal. And you keep 100% of the royalties that those stores pay out to the artist. Yeah. And because you're not dealing with a label, the labels don't take a cut. You get... the exact amount that those stores would give out after they take their cut.
Yeah, so I mean, it's pretty simple and straightforward, and it doesn't do everything, but it really does what you basically need. I'm really a fan. I think it's great. I mean, you get unlimited uploads, and then you get to have them on, you know, these huge platforms, and then for $20 a year, and that's it. That's insane to me. That's like, that's so cool.
Yeah, it's a pretty good deal. And your first upload is free, apparently.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Well, there you go. So you get...
You can put your single out there.
Yeah.
Put your Harlem Shake out there for free.
If you do that, you're doing pretty well. I'm probably getting some lawsuits that you're not going to handle, but, you know, that's okay.
They also have a really fast upload rate, 2 to 4 hours.
Really?
You can have it in the store, which is didn't incredible.
That's pretty sweet. Sort of one of the big guys competing with them is TuneCore.
Mm-hmm.
And they have 74, as we read on the website that they say, 74 distribution platforms. So, you know, that's 74 different places where they give you music that it can be sold.
Not necessarily sold, actually. A lot of them you can sell, but, you know, they also do a lot of streaming services like Spotify, basically revenue services and also music databases. So they'll send your music to, like, Gracenote CD database, and they'll send it to Shazam, so you can get Shazammed if people like your songs, which is great because that you're basically getting it out on every major platform that's used, and you get your bases covered by, you know, paying TuneCore, and they do it all for you.
Yeah, now it is more expensive, and there's the pricing is much more complex, and it has kind of like a yearly subscription thing you have to pay for your songs to be up there.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean you get everything.
Yeah, know? It's more money, but it's you get the whole package.
Yeah, they even give your music to Audium, which will basically find your songs on YouTube, and you can get money from that.
Right, their Audium is a YouTube licensing platform.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they really do it all. And then, sort of, was there anything else you want to say about TuneCore?
Yeah, they also do other stuff like mastering and CD production for extra fees. But you know, if it's kind of one of those things that if you really can't be bothered to learn all this stuff, then TuneCore is a great way to get your music out there. They're basically a label for hire, I guess you could say.
Yeah. So if you got the money, you want everything. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
I think next up we have CD Baby. They started as just CD printing. I don't know if anyone remembers. They're interesting to me because basically you can have them print albums on vinyl or CD. And they will do licensing if you want. And they can give you, you know, like they basically give you like options on how you want to distribute this stuff. But they basically let you press stuff onto physical mediums.
Yeah, CD Baby is kind of the big competitor to TuneCore, except they have, you know, they have a more established way of printing to traditional media. So if you really need your traditional media and your online stuff, CD Baby is a good option.
Yeah,
but they are quite expensive, like TuneCore.
Mm-hmm. And they take 91% of your digital, they take 9% of your digital revenue.
Right.
Whereas the other ones, DistroKid and TuneCore, don't take any. And CD Baby also takes $4 per physical item sold, so that's a, you know, vinyl or a CD, which is, from what we saw, pretty standard, except for CDs, which you can do a lot better yourself, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And that just really depends on how much you're planning to do.
Those are the big players in the online distribution game. It's definitely not an exhaustive list, but those are the big ones, and they should give you a kind of a sense of how you can actually sell your music, and not even to sell, but distribute it. A lot of people have made a name for themselves just putting free downloads on SoundCloud,
mm-hmm.
and become fairly prolific at just giving away their music.
Yeah.
And there are artists like Pretty Lights, for example, who started by giving away all his music, and now he has his own label, and he's headlining festivals and stuff like that. So, and that kind of goes into less about the way you're putting stuff out there, and more about how you're doing it and the marketing behind it and the way you're communicating to fans,
mm-hmm.
Which kind of leads into our next point. But before we get there, I just want to mention quickly about licensing, which can make you actually a lot of money, surprisingly.
Mm-hmm.
If people aren't directly interested in your music, you can also license it for, on YouTube through Audium, so that anytime someone uses your song on YouTube, you get a cut of the ad revenue. You can register through SoCan, so that in case your music gets played on radio stations or things like that, then you get royalties from that. And Rumblefish is another one that can pay you money for sync licenses, which is when your song gets used as a backing track.
And so I think next we'll move on to marketing, which is sort of a big whole university subject in its own, which we're not going to cover very much, but you know, at least the music
kind of
sense.
Go over the main points in marketing.
Yeah, the sort of the platforms.
The overarching story with online marketing for music is that it's not enough to have the platforms for your band. You really have to use them, and you have to use them the proper way. And the proper way is really just being genuine with the fans. The platforms allow you to talk to your fans directly, and so you need to use that because it's a really valuable service. There's tons of artists who have broken open and made a name for themselves just because they're really honest on their social media feeds. Mm-hmm. They have really funny or they have really enjoyable social media feeds. They have taken the time to get to know industry people and stuff like that.
Yeah, so we're talking things like Facebook, you know, getting out in the SoundCloud community, Last.fm, MySpace even, but more, you know, blogs and YouTube, getting radio play, going on to radio shows and interacting with the community in that way.
Yeah, you really have to put yourself into it, which can be a little difficult as a musician because you can be really self-conscious.
Oh, yeah.
But you kind of have to just put it out there if you really want to make it. So the online social media stuff is important, but like I said, you have to kind of be really genuine on it. If you're writing a blog, you need to know what you're talking about. It needs to be interesting. It has to be something your fans are actually interested in. It doesn't have to necessarily be about you. Yeah. And a lot of artists gain fans by having these social media platforms that aren't even about them, but made an impact on fans.
Yeah, we've talked about Dylan Francis, who, you know, he has this whole thing on cats and people love him, and that's great, you know, and that's kind of what we're talking about. And it doesn't have to be that unrelated to music even, but just putting stuff out there that people find interesting, people want to see.
I'll jump in there. So some of the methods that you can do on these online platforms, which you couldn't do before, like getting to gain fans, is doing like free downloads for clicks. So like on your Facebook, like you can put up a free song to download for the like. And you can also give out download cards and stuff like that, and business cards when you're at your live shows and everything. But basically, the idea is that if you give yourself to your fans, the fans will give back in the form of, you know, being fans and buying your music. So it's really something you can't half-ass at all. But if you're really committed to it and you're coming from a, you know, really personal place, then people really respond to that. And then the PR side of marketing is really, you can do a lot on your own as well now, because music blogs online drive so much traffic to new artists, specific ones anyway. So it's always good to email your tracks to music blogs that can make or break a band. And their music blogs have really replaced the magazines now. And you can also send them to radio stations like ours, CITR. They're always looking for cool new music. You can send them to indie labels as well.
Yeah.
A lot of artists have been broken open by Mad Decent through his art. DJs just sending their tracks to them.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about really just putting yourself out there in as many ways as you can and not being afraid to just, you know, just go at it. Just, you know, you gotta be kind of relentless about it.
Right.
Just
especially in an online world where there's so much noise.
Yeah, there's so much competition, so much of everything that you gotta find a way to stand out.
You do have to find a way to stand out, but I mean, coming from a place of, like, you know, genuine interest in your fans, that will make you stand out in its own. Because if you're an artist making interesting music, you're going to be, and you come out in a genuine way, your fans will recognize that.
Yeah, and they'll connect with that, and that's some of what it's all about.
That's really what it's all about. Yeah. Your fans connecting to you and through your music.
So now that we've figured that out, I think we're ready to go to some ads and then come back and play some music, eh?
Sounds good.
Alrighty. You're listening to The Copyright Experiment on CITR 101.9, and we'll be right back.
Having trouble finding affordable, fresh baked goods and coffee? Come down to Agora Cafe, located in the McMillan Building at UBC. There's also space available to study.
How much do you know about bikes? Everything? Perfect. Nothing at all? Even better. At the UBC Bike Kitchen, you can use our space and tools to do your own bike maintenance. Get one-on-one instruction on how to fix your bike yourself, or drop your bike off for us to repair. You can also buy a fully refurbished, guaranteed used bicycle, or a variety of new and used parts and accessories. The Bike Kitchen is UBC's non-profit, student-owned, full-service bike shop. We're located in the basement of the Student Union Building. Just look for the stairwell on the north side of the sub across from Gage Towers, or search for the UBC Bike Kitchen on Facebook. Stop by the Bike Kitchen, and then get riding.
And I can second that. The Bike Kitchen is awesome, but we're pretty awesome too. So you should keep listening, because we're about to play some pretty sweet music. First of all, we're starting off with Clams Casino.
Yeah.
The song is called "Cry for Me," and it's off his Instrumentals 3 mixtape.
Yeah, I'm gonna be taking you guys into the mix, Clams Casino to start.
So that's Autonomy on the Decks. Clams Casino on the start. This is all free music for the next 20 minutes or so here on The Copyright Experiment and on CITR 101.9.
Check out the blog. Make sure you get all our free music there.
Yeah, so everything we play is freely available, and we have the links on our blog at copyrightexperiment.tumblr.com. All right, guys, enjoy.
Bye. for me.
I can't.
and this is CSS. Let's Make Love and Listen to Death from Above. And we have Venice Beach on the remix, the Groove Box remix, that is.
We'll be right back.
Liz, XTC, Jesse Slater on the remix.
Forgiving when I give them money appealing to the white folks. Fuck behavior, I forget to take my Ritalin. We hyphy in this bitch, so let me smoke her, I'ma get it in.
Cocktail of ball, send it on a ball. Cocktail of ball, send it on a ball.
Meditation, they only see performance, never notice preparation. I've been working, running lines, 40 time accelerating. Working like a mule for 40 acres, reparation. No hesitation with the ball, dedication. Yeah, we popping in the club, but I'm just focused, I'm just waiting. You gotta keep winning if you want a celebration. Every night we in the gym, you ain't real, then I ain't hating. You gotta hit the drum board, just start a race and pull your head about your ass. Take a puff and get some patience, maybe study the greatest. Or change your occupation, or get a ghostwriter, man. You overpopulating, turn the cushions on tap. We never run out, and we finna hot box till we run out. If the cops try and stop, man, I'm finna jump out. A little gunplay, pull the fucking pump out.
St. John Hawk and Just Blaze, a track called One, released via Fact Magazine. Yeah, check it out. Just before that, we heard Ezekiel, a song called Moda, featuring Kaya Skywalker. This is my new moniker, Cloud Chambers, remix of Topless's Danger Love. Local Vancouver act, Local Vancouver remix. And that's it for this week of the Copyright Experiment. Next up, we have 24 Hours of Radio Art. And so that's various things, the first of which...
Station Takeover.
Yeah, the first of which is a four-hour segment by Bepi Crespin. And this is going to be, as he says, difficult music, harsh electronics, spoken word, cut-up, collage, and general Crespin. Weirdness courtesy of Andrew Peckler, Az Chetin, Autopsia, Bronze Sense, Emma Hendricks, Erdem Helvanchugalu, I'm probably butchering these names, If Buona, KK Noll, John M. Bennett, Juan Angel, Italiano, Marcelo Mercado, Rust Worship, Tim Hecker, and Time Attendant. And after that, we'll have another mix, another one, and it'll go all the way for the next 24 hours.
Yeah, it's, if you don't know, today the reason we're doing it is Radio Art Takeovers because today's the birthday of art, and you can read all about it on CITR.ca. And for the next 24 hours, it's all going to be experimental artistic programming over the airwaves.
Yep.
And if you tune in at 11, you can hear us again as well.
Mm-hmm. We'll be doing some of that. So, yeah, we're going to do some ads and then jump into the radio art, and you're going to have yourself a great night. That's it for us on the Copyright Experiment here on CITR 101.9.